It's your True Faith end of season podcast. Alex Hurst, Michael Collin, Ben Wade, Norman Reilly. We're going to look back at the season just gone, season 2021. Yes, it's finally over. It feels like football has been played forever because of the shortened summer last time round. We've got the Euros coming up, so there's a little bit of excitement there, but we're going to get right into Newcastle season under Steve Bruce with their 12th place finish. Lads, to get into the show, to start the show, I want to go around the room and ask you for a score out of 10 on the season. Mickey, why didn't you kick off? What did you score that season out of 10 in terms of how the team performed overall?
I'm going to give us a 3, and I feel like that's generous. If it wasn't for the last month and a half, it would have been a 1.
What would you give if we got relegated?
Also 1. You know, if it wasn't for the last month and a half, there would be a decent chance we would have got relegated. And the only reason that we haven't been relegated is firstly that last month and a half and win those games, and also Fulham just being absolutely dismal for the kind of last chunk of the season. I think 3 is fair.
Ben?
I get what Miggy's saying, but I think I'll probably give it a 5 overall.
5.
It's like 50% success.
I know. Well, what? Just because, as you said, well, you can't ignore the fact that where we've finished, and as a whole, that we have finished quite strongly. It was a brutal season, but it's finished well. So I'm going to give him a few extra points for that.
With Ben, 5 out of 10. The reason being that you ultimately have to look at the whole season. At the end of it, we finished 12th on 45 points. The performances have been absolutely shocking, but purely based on where we finished in the table and the points we've got, I can't go any lower than 5.
I think you are so generous. It's like so generous. A lot of those points, the vast majority of those points, we've got in games where we played shit.
And but we still finished 12 on 45 points. Yeah, when we finished, right? If the question was, what are the marks on performances collectively? I probably could have gone lower, but ultimately I can only look at the question, what do you give for the overall season? Overall, we finished 12th in the Premier League on 45 points with a manager who I think is absolutely terrible. We finished in that position, so I can't get any lower than 5. I think that would be taking artistic license, shall we say?
Well, I'm going to go in the middle. I'll say 4, and we'll get into the reasons why. I did ask on Twitter about an hour ago what people who follow me and their marks out of 5 would be. Very, very grateful that how many people at the time, just before we started recording, 146 people got in touch with their score. Quite interestingly, this, and also people say Twitter isn't reflective of reality or society, and they may be right, but no one went higher than 6, which I think is quite interesting. I think I didn't include point marks. For anyone who went 5.5, you just got it rounded down. Because no one went higher than 6, and no one went, well, some people try to give minus answers, but I feel we're getting into mathematical absurdity if we started including them. This is a serious podcast for serious people. So I included those as 0, but the vast majority of the scores were 3, 4s, and 5s, and it gave the listener, if we want to call this score that, the listener, 4 out of 10. So that's along with what I've given you. Now, why is Newcastle's season classed as 4 out of 10? And I suppose it's a good way to start talking about the overall season. And of course, on this podcast, we're going to talk about the players, the results, the games, what was said, what happened, what didn't happen, and all of that. As Norman correctly says, Newcastle finished 12th in the league, a scarcely believable achievement. If you go back to the dark days of January, February, and March in particular. But not an achievement at all when you look at the first half of the season. And that's why I think the season was so average and so poor. Have there been worse seasons to follow Newcastle United? Of course. Have there been better? Yes. Fairly average season in terms of league position. It actually is slightly better than the average league position under Mike Ashley, which was 13th. I think people who are more comfortable with Steve Bruce as the manager will say that he has, maybe similar to what Ben and Norman are saying, but I'll let you guys talk in a minute. You know, there's pretty much the power in the Mike Ashley. It's job done. It's he has achieved what he was asked to achieve, which is to keep the club up comfortably. 17 points, I think, in the end, clear of relegation. 5 wins in the last 8 games. One of the better teams in the Premier League over the last month and a bit of the season. Manager of the month for April. It could have been much worse. However, lads, I'm going to take you back to the distant days of December. So not right at the start of the season, not a million miles ago, not like, you know, some different team with different players, back to December. Newcastle beat West Brom by 2-1. Fairly fortunate win, like most Newcastle's wins, or many Newcastle wins. And Newcastle sit 5 points off third place Chelsea with a game in hand. Newcastle's 5 points off third place with a game in hand in December 2020. To find ourselves, therefore, not buzzing, that's an exaggeration. No one's buzzing, you weren't buzzing. But to find it kind of like, oh, you know, or let's put it this way, to find some praise delivered at Steve Bruce and the football club's door for finishing 12th. If you go back to that period and you look how close we were to actually doing something as a football club, to actually having a season worth remembering, it was quite the spectacular fall. And it's almost like a reassessment of the objectives because of how bad things got. And that's why it was such a disappointing season. And if I have any issue with Steve Bruce, right, it's not the ridiculous press conferences or abusing the fan base or, you know, pathetic behaviour towards journalists or even tactical stuff, which we might talk about later on. It's the fact that each season, right, he's been here 2 seasons, each season he's been in touch and distance of doing something, okay? Now, back end of last season, after going through a really difficult period, I think Newcastle took 12 points from 5 games when he changed formation. And we talked on the podcast at the time, when we came back from lockdown football and beat Sheffield United 3-0, we talked about pushing for the top 10, getting the 50 points. 50 points means fuck all at the end of the day, but we've done it once under Mike Ashley. And we fell away massively, and all of a sudden that season 19-20, just becomes another season that you don't really remember much about. Now, not very much happened, apart from the pandemic. You look at this season, so Steve Bruce and Newcastle United find themselves, I think, in 11th position, 5 points off third, with a game in hand, and their next 2 games are against newly promoted sides, and then they have Brentford in the cup quarterfinal. Brentford who end up pretty much playing a reserve side because the club is less important than promotion. It's a fairly spectacular collapse from that point forward. And this is the problem with Bruce. Any time the club and his team start climbing the summit, start threatening to do something, there's not just like a failure, there's an absolute capitulation. And what we saw is a capitulation of such an incredible magnitude that finishing 12th, 14 points away from the top 10, is seen as some sort of fantastic end of the season. Steve Bruce is talking at the end of the season, the last game, about showing the critics. Well, the critics existed. The critics existed then, about the style of play, about the fact it wasn't sustainable. When Newcastle finished 13th under Rafa Benitez, we were 7 points off the top 10. Obviously, we finished 10th the season before. Last season, we finished 10 points from the top 10. This season, we finished 14 points from the top 10. What does Steve Bruce say at the start of the season about Newcastle finishing the top 10? Well, I'll give you some quotes because I have them prepared. Steve Bruce asked in a press conference before the West Ham game, what is the aim for the season? He says, we gave ourselves a serious chance of the top 10 last year. If injuries are kinder this time, it's definitely achievable. He also said about, you know, he's talking about season 19-20. He said, when he talked about finishing clear of relegation, being fairly comfortable in the end, he said, that's not enough. We want to push for the top 10 on a regular basis and not have to look over our shoulders. Now, I'm going to agree with Ben and Norman a lot about Newcastle's end of the season and about the turnaround, and we'll talk about why those things happened. We'll talk about Graham Jones and Joe Willock, I'm sure. But Steve Bruce has failed by his own standards there. Now, if he and the rest of the club and someone like Lee Charnley and all of that, those kind of people at Mike Ashley, could believe that Newcastle were capable of pushing for the top 10, we have spectacularly failed in that endeavour. In addition, the fact that, like, I go back to that in December 2020, Newcastle were 5 points off third place with a game in hand. After COVID, by the way, this is after the COVID outbreak at the club, the West Ham game was the first game back. To fall so far short of all of those clubs above, your Everton's, your Arsenal's, your Leeds's, your Aston Villa's. These aren't teams that are out of reach. These aren't teams that are miles away financially from Newcastle United. My concern is that the season, and I'll give it 4 out of 10, is 4 out of 10 because we gave ourselves, and Steve Bruce gave himself the platform to do something as Newcastle manager. For him to be stood there at the end of the season and saying, I hope our critics are eating some humble pie, to me, he just doesn't get it. He doesn't understand ambition. He doesn't understand. He doesn't even understand what he was trying to achieve. Because if he thinks that humble crap pie needs to be eaten because they finished 14 points away from 10th place, that's a pretty spectacular failure for me. So 4 out of 10, I don't know who wants to either come back at me or go further into that on their own score, but the floor is your lads.
Well, I completely agree with you in that spell in December and what happened subsequently is why I've gone with the 3, because it was so bad. You've highlighted there exactly why we were close. We were within touching distance of having a half-decent season. And not only did we capitulate against, you know, a lead side that scored 5 goals against us. I know they've been a decent side this year, but to score 5 against us. We draw ones each with Fulham, which was a disaster. And then you lose a cup quarter final against a second division, second team, reserve team, literally the reserve team against our full side. And then to not react to that, considering how that just decimated our season and ruined any chance of it being a positive season, to react to it by going on a streak of winning, like, virtually no games until the end of March is just unbelievably bad. And I just can't forget that. I can't forget how it's made me feel about the club. And I've ended up over subsequent games, I think I've not watched more games this season than probably in the previous 10 seasons combined. And it's because of that. It's because the reaction to being shit has been worse than that shit, which is just pathetic.
Lads, I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying at all. The season's been absolutely horrific, right? But I'm trying to formulate my answer in as objective a manner as I possibly can, right? Which is probably wrong for like fan media. But right now, I'm trying to look at it through certain frames. And those frames are, right, Steve Bruce is a poor football manager, but he's a manager in Newcastle United, right? So my expectation levels were we would finish 16th or 17th because Steve Bruce is a poor football manager. We finished 12th. The fact that we've gone on these mad long runs will have been extremely shocking for such a long time. That's indicative of Steve Bruce's career. Alan Pardew was exactly the same at Newcastle. We were a very streaky side on Alan Pardew, right? So when I say 5 out of 10, I'm bringing in to my formulation there what my expectations are. And my expectations of Steve Bruce and Newcastle United Football Club are minuscule. So the fact that we've actually finished 17 points clear of third bottom, to me, in the context that it's in, is actually quite a huge achievement. Am I saying that those players couldn't give us more if we're the better manager? Of course I'm not. Steve Bruce is a poor football manager. Newcastle United is a poorly run football club. My expectation levels are tiny. So we finished 12th. So for me, that is actually better than I expected. It's better than I expected. Therefore, it gets a 5 from me, which is still a fairly poor score rate. What you're saying is completely bang on, but I cannot stop thinking about what my expectation levels are and what they will be as long as Steve Bruce is a football manager, this football club, because you just need to look at his career as a football manager and you need to look at where he was in his career when he arrived at Newcastle United. So that's where I'm getting my answer from.
I think mine, I'll jump in here. Mine comes from the fact that, so if you'd have said, I mean, I think we did obviously pre-season shows. I was fully expecting this team to be able to get in and around the top 10, which is where we've finished. That's where my score comes from, is the fact that I think we've just missed out on what I expected. And that's why I've got it below, because I think we were capable of getting the top 10, especially when you see how the season's unfolded in terms of there were so many teams. I mean, you've got a team like Southampton that were top of the league at one point, finished below us. Like, so, I mean, talk about capitulations and there's plenty of teams that have been as mental as we have. I mean, obviously, you look at basically that half season, so that 19-run game from kind of December till basically April, when we pick up 2 wins in those 19 games, was absolutely awful and was relegation form, obviously, which should have it got us into the relegation battle where we shouldn't have been anywhere near. But then the other 19 games got us in a position where, I mean, we finished the league the last sort of, I mean, I know people do like try and cut it up, but we finished as one of the informed teams for the sort of final part of the season. So you can't ignore that. And there is other factors that have come into it in terms of it's funny, I know we've been critical in terms of Bruce, in terms of when he's coming out saying injuries and things, and he has been able to play certain players, but in his mind, he obviously has faced some adversity. I think they've, considering where they were, that run when everything just fell apart, you've got to give them credit for turning that sinking ship around, because we did look like we were going down. I know for a fact that a lot of us thought we were down, because you've gone 19 games with 2 wins. Like, how the hell do you like get the players up after a run like that, where there doesn't really seem to be any sort of positives? There's no saviour coming in. I mean, obviously there was. It was Joe Willock that obviously came to the fore. But as I've said previously, we stumbled kind of on that accidentally. And we still had injuries. We still had games where Max Mann's not been quite fit. Wilson's obviously missed. So I think to turn things around the way they did, you've got to give them credit for finishing the way they did, because I suppose a little bit kind of what Norman said there. I just did not see that happening. And they've got up to a position where they've finished just outside the top 10. Okay, you can look at the points and say they were miles off it, but the reality is they've finished 12th again. It's kind of par for where I would have expected them at the start of the season. Yes, it's been a massively bumpy ride throughout the year, but in terms of judging them where they are, I've got to kind of say that's kind of on par.
Ben, I think it's a fair point to say the turnaround is impressive, because it is, considering how bad it was before. But I think it's disingenuous to say we're in and around the top 10, because the points difference is just so massive. Like, a 14-point difference between us and the top 10 is like, you know, it's 4 wins and 2 draws out of our losses. Like, it's such a gulf that, although like the table shows that we are close in positions to the top 10, in terms of points and performances and victories and draws, we're absolutely a million miles away.
I agree. I mean, that's a good point. Sorry, Ben, if you come back on that, mate, crack in.
No, all I was going to say was, I mean, you say, I understand what you mean in terms of the points total, but if I look at the teams that have finished the places above us, so Villa in 11th, Everton 10th, Leeds 9th, Arsenal 8th, I mean, Arsenal don't look like a great side. I don't think we're a million miles from them. And to be honest, obviously Leeds were the only team there in that run that kind of battered were in both games. The Villa ones were a bit closer, but I don't see we're a million miles from those teams at this current stage. And it was just, we had a horrific runs, and obviously there should have been, obviously they deserve all the criticism they got for that run, but I don't think we're that far away. I know the points obviously suggest that, but in terms of personnel, and if we'd have just maybe had a few, I suppose if he'd have worked out the team that we finished with earlier, we could have closed that gap a bit more. I think there were definitely points within that run where we could have got more of it. But now I understand what you're saying. I don't completely disagree, but I don't think things are as bad as kind of making out.
Arsenal beat with 3 times this season, but didn't score.
But they're a poor team.
Yeah, we know.
and we expected to go into those games. So I'm not. I mean, we've battered Everton twice. I mean, we've taken points off better teams than Arsenal. Do you know what I mean? It's not always an exact science like that, is it?
I think everyone's making good points. The reality is, we do know that we're not like West Ham finished like 6th. We're not far off them in terms of playing personnel. But ultimately, it's down to the management, right? And regardless of those bad runs that we had, those bad runs happened because we've got a manager who historically has bad runs. That's the reality there. But in terms of the kind of progression when we put ourselves in good positions, you mentioned after the West Brom game, Alex, we're 5 points off Chelsea. The reality is, we'd only played 11 games by this point, right? The same point the season before, we played 17 games because of COVID in the points differentials. So if you look after 17 games this season, we were 15th on 19 points. 17 games the season before, we were 11th on 22 points. There's a 3-point difference in a 4-point play, you know, 4 points in terms of places, but it's 3 points different. So ultimately it's the same, you know, like those 11 games. Yes, I appreciate 5 points on third top, but you know, 11 games isn't that many. 6 games later, we're back in the same position we were. So I think that the fact that is always going to be the fact that Steve Bruce is at best, lower mid-table Premier League manager, at best, regardless of the personnel that are out there.
And this is the question, isn't it? You both, Norman and Ben, just touched on what I wanted to talk about next anyway. It's like, we're trying to analyse Newcastle's season, and we're all admitting it wasn't great. 5s and 4s and 3s. The listeners on my little Twitter question or saying it was very poor on the whole. I think even people who gave it a six, which was the highest score and gave it, all caveated the six massively, but kind of said, you know, in terms of expectation, in terms of Ashley, in terms of Bruce, in terms of how bad it could have been, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But this is the fundamental point for me. And Ben, you touched it there about we're not being a million miles away from some of those sides. You make a good point about the two performances against Everton, the performances against Leeds and Arsenal. And I'd say Aston Villa. We played Villa without Grealish, and Villa are basically a joke for the 1-1 draw, and that humiliated were at their place pretty much. And, you know, let's not forget, Leeds are newly promoted side. Villa finished 17th last season, and all of a sudden we're 14 points behind them. What's going on? But the bigger issue is how good should the season have been in terms of the resources available to the manager? And I take your point on board, Norman, about Bruce. This is Steve Bruce's 12th place, and Steve Bruce's Premier League career is a really positive finish for him. So why should we expect anything different? But I haven't, you know, one of the big issues, and we want to talk about issues and some positives as well on this podcast. One of the big issues for Newcastle is, can you tell me how many players started more than 30 Premier League games for Newcastle this season? Anyone want to give it a go?
Oh, God.
Four from Miggy.
Not many. I mean, you would normally say the keeper, and he didn't.
Give us a number, Ben. Stop sitting on the fence.
One.
One. Norman.
Two.
Zero is the answer.
Whoa!
Zero players. Miguel Almirón started more games than anyone. Sorry, not Miguel Almirón. Jonjo Shelvey.
I was going to say Jonjo would have been the one I would have said.
Yeah, Jonjo.
Him on 29. Him on 29. Almirón on 28. the next number is Carl Darlow on 25, and Callum Wilson on 23, and then Isaac Hayden, I think, on 22. What does that tell us? That Steve Bruce simply did not know his best team until right at the end of the season. It's a quite shocking statistic there, and I've got some bad ones to go through later on in the show. But that in itself, that describes chaos. Do you know what I mean? That describes chaos. Frequent player changes, constantly changing formations. This is a season, and I've fucking talked about this all year on the podcast, and probably lots on Patreon as well, on the Patreon podcast that we do and will do all summer. Maybe I'll give that a little plug later. Steve Bruce talked incessantly in pre-season about playing two strikers and playing four at the back. We spent the whole of pre-season and the friendlies playing 4-4-2, which was good. I'm all for that. I would rather see us score some goals occasionally, and I don't think we'll have to play five at the back. I could admit the system has helped at the end of the season, blah, blah, blah. Steve Bruce talked about playing 4-4-2. We played every pre-season game 4-4-2. We played the first three games of the season 4-4-2. First two games, sorry, with West Ham and then Blackburn. Didn't concede a goal. After one defeat, one defeat to Brighton, and it was a bad one, don't get us wrong, it was a bad defeat. After one defeat, he went back to 5-3-2 or 5-4-1 or whatever you want to call it. That is not normal at top-level football. Do you know what I mean? Teams don't spend the whole of a pre-season, all the pre-season friendlies and the start of the season training and playing a certain style, only to revert after one disaster. And it signifies a lack of belief in themselves, in the players, in the system, in the coaching staff. Like, there's probably some great shit-the-bed moments from the whole of history, not just football, but I reckon that would be pretty near the top. So in terms of, like, back to the use of just players, you know, talking about my original question, I suppose, that I want to come on to, about where what could it have been like? Where should it have been if it wasn't for Bruce's failings or player failings or COVID, whatever excuse or reason there is about why Newcastle finished where they did? Going back to that little run after 11 games, Norman, and you are right, it was an earlier, you know, dip season, different in terms of, you know, the fixtures, because we started a few weeks later and fixtures were constant midweek for a long time, all that kind of stuff. But the thing I want to say is that, you know, Steve Bruce, even pre-season, was talking about injuries, saying we need luck with injuries. And that's fine, okay? That's fine. But some of Newcastle's darkest days this season have included Callum Wilson. that Leeds game, the Fulham game, the Brentford game. Callum Wilson played all three of those games, scored against a penalty, a most undeserved penalty against Fulham. So my question to you lads is, and I mean it for all of you, even you and Norman and you, Ben, about what you were saying about expectation and the fact that you finished a decent position compared to the expectation. Where do you think a squad like this could have finished this season, both with injuries, a team and a formation played consistently? Well, you know, I don't know the answer to that, but if I'm saying, Mickey, you as well, we're saying we've had a really bad season. You're saying it's been a disaster. Well, fucking hell, if we've played pretty much three quarters of a season without knowing our best team, without most of our best players, and I'm not just going to include St. Maximan and Callum Wilson. Let's look at Isaac Hayden, who would be a shoo-in. Let's look at Jamal Lascelles. I mean, let me have a really quick look there about how many games. Jamal Lascelles only made 20 Premier League appearances. He's missed half a season. Martin Dubravka has missed half a season. Matt Ritchie, even though he wasn't injured, has missed half a season. Just how high would the ceiling be? Anyone can take this question, whoever has the strongest desire to answer. Just how high is the ceiling for this squad? Because if I'm saying we're fucking shite and it's the manager's fault, then fucking how good could we be if all of these things I'm talking about that went wrong went right? And is that realistic? Because I'm almost talking myself into thinking here, fucking hell, we're not that good. You know what I mean? We're not a top six side, but so much went wrong this season and we finished 12th.
We could have been.
I'm myself.
I mean, I've mentioned the four teams above where I don't think we're a million miles away from them in terms of they've got, well, I suppose you look at Leeds. So Leeds played some great football, but bloody hell, they shipped some goals. Like, not a great defensive side. They had some real problems, and it's still one of the criticisms of Bielsa in terms of you think about what's their ceiling. Well, it's not very high unless they can stop keeping teams from scoring against them. Villa, as you say, had an unbelievable turnaround. I mean, 17th last year and were a worse team than we were, to then jumping up, and some of the results they had were unbelievable. But again, massively reliant on Grealish. And if he gets injured and all teams work out how to stop him, which they haven't done yet, to be fair, but if they could, then again, they aren't a great team outside of that bubble. And then Arsenal are just a shambles. I still think Arteta is still trying to find out his best team, still hasn't found it. Their big name players let them down. So I don't think we're a million miles away from them. So, I mean, that's, you're looking at like eighth position there. I mean, Everton are kind of the funny one there. I don't know how we beat them twice. And you look at their team, they're a really, really strong squad, got a great manager. I don't really know how they've dropped the bullet that they did and finished as low as they did. That home form is just mental. I mean, obviously, I think they've put in their best away record for the club. It was a club record away season, but their home one was the worst they've ever had. So goodness knows what's happened there. But you kind of expect them to go. So, I mean, realistically, I would say Villa, Leeds and Arsenal are probably the three that I would be kind of looking next year that we could probably reel in and get a bit closer to. I mean, it's an interesting, though, like you've referenced a few things there. It's funny that I think it's not just the managers necessarily. This team are very streaky. We've already said it. I mean, how many times have we had bad runs under the previous manager? We didn't win a game for 9 or 10 games a couple of seasons ago. And they always finish strongly. They always have a really good end of the season. So if you take Bruce out of the equation, the season's kind of gone similar to what this group of players are capable of. And I think that's the problem, is that there's not that consistency there, that they don't generally start seasons particularly great, but they finish strongly. But it's that kind of... There is a ceiling to these players. It is interesting, I suppose, because you're saying there, Doddy, about where could they get. I don't think they could get much higher, because I think there is limits to their players. I mean, let's be honest, Matt Ritchie, for as much as we love him, and he had a massive impact this season, but he's not a top quality player that every other team's thinking, oh, well, I'd love him to be in our side. He's a grafter and he's got a lot of good characteristics, but as a player, he is limited. I mean, the one thing I would say is you've got a striker in Wilson that is capable of, if you've got a striker that can guarantee you 20 goals. I mean, how many games did you say he played this season? 23. So two-thirds of a season, but imagine you played another third of the season, maybe got another 5-6 goals. So you're not a million miles away from 20 goal season striker. That should be enough to push you up and get you into sort of that back end of the top 10. And to me, that's kind of where I see this team being capable of, is that I think the trajectory, and we've added some good players. I mean, as I say, Maximan, Almiron, Wilson, all on the pitch together. Obviously, you throw in Joe Willock, who's obviously not going to be, probably not going to be there next season. But for that, where that team was, obviously for this season, there was some strength in that team. But equally, it is just these are streaky players, and we go through highs and lows with confidence. I think when they're inconfident, they can beat anyone. But we know that confidence is very fragile, that we can get battered. So I think there's a couple of teams above with it we could look to chase. But I think that's probably the max. Like, I'd probably say eighth is probably the sort of the ceiling of this team at the minute.
But look, I completely agree with that. But I think the squad of players, I think that team, look, it's capable of better, yes. It's all down to the way I look at it when you've got a squad like that. So let's say, you know, you look at Leeds, right? Leeds have got Rafinha, but Maximan is our Rafinha, right, to a certain extent. Look at Leeds defenders. Look at our defenders. Much of a difference? Not really. Look at, I don't know, players like Stuart Dallas, Alioski. Well, you know, we can say Richie's past it, but is Richie any worse than like someone like Alioski? Possibly not, no, right? Bamford, Wilson. Wilson's way better than Bamford. So this, to me, comes down to coaching, management and tactical capacity, right? Now, if we've got a squad that is as capable as Leeds' squad, as capable as West Ham's squad, which I believe it is, right? You put the right person in charge and there's no reason we can't be where they are, right? Leeds finished in ninth and you might think, oh, ninth to 12th, that's not much. Leeds finished on 59 points. They're like 6 points off, basically, or 6 or 7 points off finishing fifth. They're like, you know, 3 wins off the Champions League. So to finish ninth on 59 points is huge. So if we finish ninth on 59 points, playing the kind of football that Leeds do, that to me would represent real progress. And I think this squad has the capacity to do that. It is down to coaching. It's down to management. And Steve Bruce, and again, as I say, in context, getting with the 12th based on his managerial history is an achievement for him, right? So that's what you got. It's an achievement by him. But ultimately, you put someone like Bielsa in charge of that Newcastle squad, then they're all capable of more. They are capable of more because the players aren't, in general, much worse than West Ham. I look at West Ham's defence. You're telling me Craig Dawson is like a player who would walk into Newcastle's team if he was in the squad right now, ahead of someone like Ferdinand Fernandes? I don't believe that he is. Miguel Antonio is a fantastic player. Is he as good as Cam Wilson? I don't know. Maybe he isn't. Bowen really that good? Well, he's all right, but is he any better than Miguel Almiron, perhaps? So I think the players are there. The potential's there. It is all about coaching and management. So while Steve Bruce is in charge, I think 12th place is as good as it's going to get. With a manager, I think, of a higher calibre than him, I don't see why the squad couldn't finish in a lead-type position on those points.
It's kind of the beauty of football is that it's impossible to say, though, isn't it? There's so many variables, so many things that can change or go wrong or go right. That to put a ceiling on this team and the players that we've got is virtually impossible. I mean, you look back at the Pardew season when we finished fifth. Everything that could have gone right for us went right for us all season. Like, we had no injuries. We played virtually the same 11 in every single game. Like, we won a lot of games by small margins. So this Newcastle United is never realistically going to achieve that unless we get another kind of miracle run of luck like we did in that year. But you think about what Ben said earlier and being in and around the top 10, that is what this squad for me is capable of. And you look around our squad at some of our players and think about what they will be able to achieve in a better side than ours. Put Callum Wilson in Leeds team this year and assume that he plays most of the season, so has a reasonably injury-free season. He's 20 to 25 goals. Put Sir Maximan in a better side. Play him at Villa with Grealish. Play him in an Everton side with James Rodriguez and Calvert-Lewin up front. And he runs rings around people and creates chances and creates goals. Miguel Almiron, put him in a team where he doesn't have to do a massive amount of defensive work, where he doesn't play like virtually defensive midfield for like a third of the season, where he doesn't miss a load of games for no good reason, despite being one of our best players. He has a great season and he does really well. So there's a lot of key things that could change with this Newcastle team at the moment that would mean we'll be better. But if we're realistic about it, you look at the weaker links in our team and in our squad, especially when you think about the size of the squad and the depth of the squad. How high can we get up the league? probably not a massive amount further than we are in terms of positioning, in terms of points, and definitely in terms of performance, we're going to be significantly better than we have been. And my, you know, my score of three, I would have been comfortable giving a better than three score for us finishing lower in the league if it hadn't been so dismal for such long periods of it. But so performance wise and points wise, we could be quite a lot better. But you know, ninth, eighth is probably the ceiling in a realistic season where the points totals are spread in the usual way throughout the league, which they haven't quite been this year.
I've got some stats to support that. Norman, you sent me the first one to give you credit. And that's, so Martin de Vrij is a big one, isn't he? I think everyone can agree, one of Newcastle's best players, crucial player, fantastic, really good business by the club to get him on a long-term contract this season. You know, a bit of good business there. So, yeah, he was injured for the first half of the season. We all know that. Carl Dolo comes in and does very well. Saves points for Newcastle. Brilliant. But when Dubravka was back and fit and in the team, with Dubravka in the team, played 13, lost 3, drew 5, won 5, average points a game, 1.38. With Dubravka on the bench behind Dolo, played 11, lost 8, drew 1, won 2, points per game, 0.63. So Newcastle picked up double the amount of points per game with Dubravka in the team. And you might say, you know, would he have, Dubravka have won us any points in those games? You made a slight mistake for one or two goals. Is it that important? And I would disagree with you, because I saw some stuff on social media where people were saying, yeah, you couldn't praise Cardola's performances and then say we missed Martin Dubravka. But you can. I think you can. Dubravka brings more than shot stopping. I think Carl Darlow is an excellent shot stopper. I think he commands his area poorly. He's poor coming for crosses. He's poor with the ball at his feet. And he's also not great at organising and marshalling defence. Dubravka is a top quality goalkeeper in all of those categories. It makes a massive difference to the team in terms of organisation. That's just one player. You might think, all right, well, that's just one player. Steve Bruce is Steve Bruce. He always picks players who are playing well and doing well. If there's a goalkeeper who's doing well on the team, they need to make a massive error to be dropped. Okay, let's talk about Matt Ritchie. Matt Ritchie, who spent, I think, only 6 games this season injured. I think he was available for the rest of the season. 4 games a season earlier on, he didn't make the bench, by the way. Just through not being selected, didn't make the bench. With Matt Ritchie in the team, played 15, lost 5, drew 6, won 7. Points per game, 1.38. Same as Dubravka, exact same points per game. Without him in the team, I've realised I've cocked up my statistics there, so never mind. But without him in the team, way less. You'd have to take a word for it. But basically, Matt Ritchie and Martin Dubravka were available for a third of the season, Ritchie two-thirds of the season, but just weren't selected. That's not like getting the selection slightly wrong. When you look at those statistics there, and that's skewed, possibly because of the good end the whole team had to the end of the season with St. Maximin back, with Wilson back for a little bit. But we'll talk about the higher ceiling of the team. We're talking about the season just gone. I honestly think, particularly going back to that beautiful December day, even though we played Trent against West Brom and we're so close to like actually having a season, the manager just consistently failed to find solutions to problems, and there were plenty of problems, and it's almost like that's the point of Steve Bruce, okay? Steve Bruce was brought in to find a solution to Newcastle being in China for pre-season and not having a manager. Steve Bruce was the solution to that problem. What are Newcastle's problems now? What are Newcastle's problems been this season? Well, I'll give you statistically some of Newcastle's problems this season. All right, I've had a look at the statistics for Newcastle compared to the rest of the other teams in the league. Mickey, this feeds into your point about how bad the performances have been and how undeserved often points have been. All right, so only West Brom and Sheffield United had less shots on per game on average. We had 10 shots per game on average. Only those two teams had less. Only West Brom had less possession in the whole of the Premier League. And by the way, they had comfortably more possession than us on average before Sam Allardyce took over. So we would have finished bottom had West Brom not made that change. There were only 3 worse teams in terms of passing accuracy in the league. And that was Burnley, West Brom, Sheffield United. Only Burnley and Man City made less tackles. Man City, for obvious reasons, because they've got the ball. So we don't tackle anyone. Only West Brom conceded more shots per game than Newcastle. Only Sheffield United made fewer interceptions per game than Seabrook's Newcastle team. Only West Brom conceded more goals at home. We have the worst home defensive record in our Premier League history, going back to season 93-94, I believe. And only three teams scored more penalties than us. And I can think of four penalties off the bat that I didn't think we deserved. So when you look at those stats there, you think, fucking hell, Newcastle are dog shit. Like, they really, really are a dog shit team. So we finished 12th, and that's fantastic. But one of the reasons I think many fans are so negative about this, one of the reasons a lot of fans maybe begrudge the team finishing as high, the manager finished as high, Norman, I want to come to you on that in a minute. But I think the reason is we're talking about upper ceilings of this team. We're talking about what could be if you pick the right players and you play the right formation. You don't fuck about in pre-season playing a formation you're going to ditch after two games. You pick you pick players in the right positions. You play your best goalkeeper. You keep your players fit. And who knows what could happen? I think the problem, and people can get in touch, tweet us, whatever, you know, always up for the conversation if you think I'm wrong here. But I think a lot of Newcastle fans think we have just seen the ceiling under Steve Bruce. This is the best it will get, and it feels shit. It feels empty, and it feels boring, because it ain't going to get any better than this, because next season when we come back, we're going to have the same issues. And to throw another one in there, throw another issue, what's the solution? Newcastle not signing Joe Willock, by the way, because if we don't sign him, and fair play to Steve Bruce, he identified Joe Willock, and he went out and got him. Well done. Really good. Got an eye for a player, clearly. Congratulations. And I'm not being sarcastic there. That is a fantastic signing to bring in on loan. Jeff Hendrick ain't scoring those 8 goals. Do you know what I mean? Isaac Hayden, if he stays fit, is not scoring those goals. If Newcastle don't score those 8 goals and get those points, the season's a different. So I don't think we'd have gone down, because at the end of the day, it was a lowest points total ever needed to stay in the Premier League this year. So survival's not really that much of a talking point, in my opinion. You know, there are a number of problems still from those statistics there to this Newcastle United side, and I feel that most fans feel that Steve Bruce doesn't have the answers. And if we finish 12th again next season, it'll be some sort of small miracle based on those statistics. I don't know who wants to talk about that.
I definitely agree. It would be a miracle. You don't, you know, lightning doesn't strike twice. You don't have that barrage of like massively negative stats about your team over the course of a 38 game season, which is a long time. It's a lot of football. 38 games of 93 minutes. To be in the bottom three for all of the key statistics over the course of a season is horrific. And it, you know, that means we're worse than at least one of the relegated sides, more often than not, more than one of the relegated sides in every one of those key parameters, which is dismal. You're not going to finish 12th doing that more than once, but like no way is it going to happen again. And the team is going to be worse next year because we're not going to have Willock. Some of the older lads are going to be a year older. There's 3, 4, 5, you know, first team players that are whose contracts are up for renewal next year. Supposedly, we've got a transfer budget, if you believe what you read in the papers, of £12 million, which buys you just absolutely nothing in today's market. What's going to happen next year? That's, you know, that's kind of part of the problem of this year is that you just, like you say, Alex, this is the ceiling, and you were right at the ceiling, and even getting to that ceiling, it's been horrendous. Like, it's been horrendous to watch. It's been dismal to watch. It's been dismal to talk about. It's been dismal to listen about. It's been horrendous having to listen to the national press and the pundits talk about how good a job the manager's doing when we can see with our own eyes and the statistics prove that the football has been turgid and our position in the league and our points in the league are not deserved. I think next year will be a massive struggle to not be relegated, and we mark my words, we were lucky this year that there was three really bad teams in the Premier League, really, really shocking football teams that have all deservedly gone down. That is the main reason that Newcastle United have stayed in the league this year.
But just to play devil's advocate, Mickey, surely there was 5 teams below us who would have gone down first because we finished higher than them.
There was, but if you ask the fans of those clubs how bad a season they've had, I bet the average score would be higher than 4.
Yeah, I agree. It's a good comeback. Norman, I touched on a lot of things, but one of the things you wanted to talk about, and I think this comes back into relation about how it feels, the 12th place finish, how it feels, and some fans begrudge, you know, those last 2 wins, for example, weren't particularly enjoyable to watch. I get it. Some people say, if you can't watch your team win and be happy, will you ever be happy? Fine, we maybe have that conversation another day. But does what the manager say and the way he behaves about all of these things, classic example, last game of the season, just finished 12th, wants people to eat humble pie, is what he does and says, does it have as much of an impact as the bad performances?
Are you saying that it's not all about the accumulation of points? The way Steve Bruce conducts himself in interviews, at press conferences, makes him a very difficult person to like from a fan's perspective. I think how he's spoken about fans has been contemptuous. He's accused fans of being histrionic, abusing them. And look, there would have been undoubtedly abuse on social media. There would have been people throwing personal insults at him on social media. But this isn't, it's not like people are in stadiums doing what they did with Alan Pardew, for example, and basically booing him with such verocity, such force that he wouldn't even come out of the dugout. This hasn't happened. I actually think that Steve Bruce has had a fairly easy ride when I think back of what Newcastle managers have gone through when fans have been in stadiums in the past. That, you know, I've seen really strong chants of managers out, like Jim Smith, for example. The abuse was incessant for more or less the whole of the 1991 season. And Bruce seems to think that it's coming at him from all angles, when ultimately all he gets is complete and utter support, more or less, bar Craig Hope, who, you know, that's a whole different story with the tweet that his own sons put out this week on Steve Bruce, on Craig Hope. He gets support across the board. So when he comes out and says things like eating humble pie, when he comes out and accuses people of being histrionic, and basically tries to frame it like he's doing a fantastic job in incredibly testing circumstances when the world's against him, it makes every single point that he collects, in my opinion, quite hard to stomach. Like, it really does. And also, I think getting 45 points, and as Mickey's said on several occasions now, the performances have been, like, for the most part, for the 2 years he's been here, they've been absolutely atrocious. Like, they've been abysmal. Like, put it this way. If Newcastle had been hovering around 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th all season, right? And we finished in 12th. You might think, well, you know what? Actually, we've been sound all season. We've played poor football, but we haven't had any relegation battle. We moved up to 12th on the last day of the season. And basically 3 weeks ago, we're fourth bottom, but we've been struggling all season. A lot of teams who'd already secured their Premier League status have just collapsed at the end of the season. And we've ultimately taken advantage of that, right? So it's kind of almost polished the turd, right? It has, finishing 12th in many respects. And the fact that this has happened, we've got 45 points, we're finishing 12th, and Bruce is telling people to eat humble pie, is making it very difficult to look at this in any kind of way of being an achievement. He's somebody who, I think, if he'd been himself more humble, honest, not as hypercritical of the fans, I'd probably have a lot more sympathy and a lot more respect for what he's actually done in, to a certain extent, the testing circumstances of working for a chairman who doesn't necessarily want to own the club. But ultimately, how he talks about fans and how he frames his own personal persecution and the words, my attitude, it almost stops me enjoying wins, which is an absolute madness as a fan. It really is. Whether that's reparable or not, whether it's possible to repair that, I don't know, because he's a 61-year-old who's been managing for 20 years. I don't see some overnight epiphany where he comes back next season and starts saying, you know what, actually, I'm going to be a lot more respectful of fans and I'm going to be a bit more honest. I can't see that happening. So repairing his relationship with the fans who already dislike him, that's going to be tough, right?
Very tough. Very tough. We'll crack on. I think you've covered it all perfectly there. And I know for a fact a lot of Newcastle fans feel exactly the way you do, because we talk about it and I see it on social media. And I think everyone wants the team to win and everyone wants the team to do well. But it's like when we beat Leicester 4-2 in what we'll talk about games of the season later, but I'm sure that's up there for everyone. Why go on national radio to abuse the fans and criticise a journalist in the Northeast? Like, it makes me worry as a fan that this is the ceiling. Do you know what I mean? When your manager, in his reaction after a massive win against a great team, isn't to think, well, you know, fantastic, let's do that again against Manchester City. And the Manchester City performance was okay. But it was to ring off TalkSport, criticise the fans and criticise the journalists. You just think, how long can it go on? How long can it go on with a manager with all of the problems that we've talked about if that's his concern and that's his focus, and his focus isn't making Newcastle United better every single day, there's only so long you can survive in the Premier League with that kind of attitude, in my opinion. Could be wrong. Let's talk about players, lads. Let's talk about players across the season. Ben, I know you wanted to talk about Bruce and the players that he signed and the new lads and how they've done. I don't know whether you want to include Graham Jones in that. England's Graham Jones, by the way, as is now. But I'll pass the mic over to you, mate.
Yeah, just obviously we're talking about discussion points, and I think it's interesting. Obviously, he's had a lot of backing from the club the last couple of seasons, and I think one of the biggest sort of key areas for this team reaching that ceiling is that because we know that there's not unlimited resources there, it's finite, there's not a huge amount to come in, you have to nail all of the signings pretty much. I think every season you need to hit on pretty much, I mean, so we had five signings this season, you probably need to hit on four of them to kind of see that progression. Obviously we brought in Wilson, who has matched all expectations in terms of came in, he's a brilliant striker, he's a proper number nine, does everything you want. And we've said already on this podcast, he's the type of player that should be making the difference to get us into that top 10 and pushing higher. We obviously we missed him for a few games this season, but as you said, he was in within the team. So for some of the sort of the lowest points, but a lot of that again was down to the fact that we didn't have the team around him for a lot of the games in terms of the support. And it was kind of the catalyst, I suppose, was the Graham Jones sort of introduction and obviously that Everton game where he kind of came alive, and that was probably one of his strongest performances of the season. He looked unplayable that day, and showed kind of the potential that he's capable of. So you've got to say, obviously, we've nailed that. And to be fair to Bruce as well, I'm sure Wilson had a lot of suitors in the summer. That was a great coup to get him. And at 20 million is an absolute snip. So that's an amazing sort of bit of business to get Wilson to come, obviously, to the club and buy into whatever vision he'd been sold. Because I'm sure he's a player on the cusp of the England team. I mean, You kind of wonder, he couldn't have been a million miles away from being included in that if he'd stayed fit and continued sort of his form trajectory all the way through the season. He's a player capable of playing for England. I think he's obviously had caps in the past. So he's a top quality player who we've got at the prime of his career. And that was a massive sign. And if we can keep him for a number of years, then that's something to build on and a massive positive. Obviously, the Willock loan signing. I think we all thought he'd be a good addition, an improvement on what we had. But nobody was expecting the return that we got. I mean, obviously 7-7 for the end of the season, and funnily enough, he kind of took on that position that I think we'd kind of all been. Wondering who the hell is going to play that kind of focal point of the midfield and sort of getting forward to support the strikers. We've really, really struggled in that. And obviously Almiron's kind of not been played there when a lot of us were calling out for that. But I think what you see with Almiron playing that position is his goal output isn't enough. He misses a lot of chances and he's maybe doesn't carry the threat. But Willock came in, and I mean, you just have to look at that goal against Fulham on the last day. I mean, he carries the ball from deep, runs 40, 50 yards, gets a bit lucky with obviously the initial shot sort of come back to him. But we don't have another player in the team that scores that goal. So as you said, Dodsy, like that was a player that Bruce identified, said we need him. A little bit odd that he wasn't introduced and kind of playing as much initially. Obviously, the Tottenham games come off the bench very late on and nicked the equaliser. But I suppose that would be my only criticism, was that I don't think we utilised him as effectively from the beginning. But the end result was unbelievable, and he's been a brilliant signing. But then I look at the other kind of three first teamers that were brought in. So Hendrick, just does not look. And to be fair, I called it when we signed him. I just did not see how he was going to be a player that would come in and improve us. I think the type of role he did for Burnley was he's basically like a poor man's John Joe Shelvey without the passing, without sort of the technical ability. And he just got found wanting in a lot of games. And I think he was a critical player at times during that bad run where he just offered nothing to the team. And it's a bit worrying that, okay, we didn't spend a huge amount of money on him. I mean, he's a free transfer, but the sort of the resources that have gone onto his wages, I'm sure he's not badly paid. So you think that's quite an investment to kind of invest in a position and for a player that just hasn't worked. Jamal Lewis, obviously.
So we're going to talk about in a second, Ben, because Mickey was dead keen to talk about Newcastle centre in the season. So we'll bring him on this and then go back to Lewis.
Go on then. Go on then.
Well, it's linked well, isn't it, when you're talking about Jeff Hendrick, who has had just virtually no impact this season. Nobody was excited about him signing, and then he started reasonably well playing on the right-hand side. Remember, he scored and got an assist in his first two games, despite not being particularly good, and you thought, you know, just maybe he might have an all right season. He didn't. Obviously, he had a terrible season. And you look at that, you look at the centre of the park for Newcastle United, and you just think, where is the quality, and how do we improve it? And, you know, we've brought in Joe Willock for the second half of the season, played him sparingly, I would say, compared to what we could have. And he's done a great job, but even he probably isn't the solution. You know, he's done very well in terms of his forward play, and obviously his goal scoring has been absolutely tremendous. But is he the solution of one of a two man midfield or one of a three man midfield? If it's a flat three that we seem to be intent on playing, if there's going to be two strikers and five at the back, is he one of those? I don't necessarily think that he is in the long term vision. And you look at the rest of the lads that are at the club. Alex, you mentioned before Isaac Hayden, who's missed the end of the season through injury. He is the one that I would say should be starting in the Premier League for Newcastle United, and he can operate in a specific role, the defensive role, sweeping up, tackling a lot, breaking up play for the opposition, giving the ball to more creative players on our side to then progress up the pitch and do something for us. The rest of the lads we've got in the squad at the minute, discounting Joe Willock, who isn't going to be here next season by the looks of it, are not at the moment good enough, and also if they are going to be good enough, they aren't ever going to be good enough in the system that Bruce has developed for them. Sean Longstaff has regressed as a player under Steve Bruce massively over the last 2 years. Mike Longstaff can't get a sniff. John Joe Shelvey has been the most consistent in terms of appearances player in the Newcastle United squad this year, and I that's something that I just, you know, it just absolutely blows my mind. Like every single week we talk about him on the podcast and say he shouldn't be in the team, he doesn't offer enough, he doesn't have the legs, he can't tackle. I read a while ago he's got the worst tackling statistics for any central midfielder in the Premier League in history. Now that might be exaggerated, I did genuinely read that, I can't remember where, but it wouldn't surprise me if that was true. Like, those players aren't good enough for Newcastle United to progress, and I don't see what the solution is, because we don't have the money and the owner doesn't have the appetite and the manager probably doesn't have the vision to bring in a player that's going to solve that problem, to play in central midfield and in quite a difficult system to play central midfield in. And I seriously worry, and that for me is the reason why this Newcastle team will not progress, particularly under this manager, but possibly without as well, is we don't have anyone that's good enough to play in the middle of the park as a top-class Premier League midfielder. Compare us with a lot of the other teams in the Premier League. That's really, for me, where we're massively behind everyone else, and it's arguably the most important position on the pitch.
Ben, Lewis.
Yeah, I mean, Jamal Lewis is probably one of the ones most disappointed in. Just, I think, obviously, I mean, I wasn't expecting a huge amount from him. Obviously, Norwich were a relegated side. He struggled a bit, but we know what we've been lacking for years as a club, is we've never really had a true sort of all round left back. We've obviously kind of had Dummett, who plays pretty much as a sort of defensive fullback, doesn't really get forward, doesn't really offer anything. And I thought Lewis would come in and at least give us a bit of energy and a bit of just more options in terms of the attacking intent. And obviously, the kind of all the talk pre-season from Bruce and for a lot of the times about sort of playing front foot football, playing more attacking, trying to sort of get further up the pitch. Jamal Lewis should have been a massive part of that. And unfortunately, for whatever reason, I think he just doesn't look like he's settled. I don't think Bruce has helped him either in terms of he's obviously the support he's been given and in terms of the players that have sort of been played around him and the style of football and things like that. I just don't think they've contributed to us. I mean, you look at the impact Richie's had coming in, playing in that same role, and he's been so much more looked more comfortable, and there's probably elements of confidence in that in terms of obviously Lewis is adapting to a new team and he's still a young player and things like that. But I just think he was one of probably the most disappointing bit of business we did, because I kind of expected a lot more from him. Now he's a young player, he's obviously, he could still turn this around and become a great player, but I think he was the one I kind of expected more from to be able to come in and give us a bit of a push from sort of attacking fullbacks, and in fact it's ended up being Richie and Murphy that have come in and done that role. So I think that was probably the most disappointing bit of business, in that it was a decent investment in him, and I think he's got potential, but we've just not seen anywhere near that.
I think that with a player like Lewis, and also like a lot of young players who come through, or a lot of young players that might be signed based on a decent season in the Premier League, I think if they're going into a team that isn't battling relegation, they'll probably settle in a lot better, right? Lewis is coming straight into a poor side in terms of, you know, well, we are poor side, right? We know that, yes, okay, the players have got ability, we've discussed that, but in terms of where we are as a Premier League club, we've been struggling for years, ever since we come back up ultimately. And I think Lewis and someone like Sean Longstaff and someone like Matty Longstaff, for example, although Matty probably hasn't played enough for me to really form this opinion, but ultimately I think these players, because they're not like spectacularly gifted talents, that the potential, right, that needs developing. So they need micromanaging, they need taking a tactical input, they need talking to throughout the whole game, you know, like they need giving encouragement, they need the experienced players to help them grow. Whereas someone like Willock comes in, right, a kid who's come out through the Arsenal Academy, which is superb as well, but also is a very, very talented player. He's more naturally talented than any of those players I mentioned. So he comes in and he can more or less hit the ground running, because he doesn't necessarily need that kind of tackle input. He will in a season or two's time in order to develop even further, but he's already at a better level than those lads. Those lads need more support. And Jamal Lewis, I don't think would have got it at Newcastle. So for me, he hasn't necessarily been disappointing, because I think he's always a player I thought he's going to need a lot of time spent on him, and he was never going to get it at Newcastle under Steve Bruce, under that coaching staff, and in a team that struggles against relegation. And you say that we brought back in Matt Ritchie, because Matt Ritchie is an experienced, battle-hardened Premier League player. There's still potentially over Lewis and the Longstaff brothers, but whether it's going to happen in Newcastle under the current regime, I don't know. Keith Gillespie, I've just recorded a podcast with him this evening for patrons. So if you're watching this for free and you want to hear Keith Gillespie's opinions on the season, which are really obviously insightful, coming from a kind of ex-pros point of view, it's really interesting to hear what he said. He spoke about Lewis, he's a compatriot, right? I mean, they're both Northern Irish, so Keith's got like he's always kind of looking out for those Northern Irish players. And he said he's been disappointed by Jamal Lewis' progression, because he thought he was really going to kick on this season. So it's interesting to hear that he's disappointed, whereas on a personal perspective, I'm not necessarily so, because I just feel that he is a good player, but he probably needs a lot more than he's got it in Newcastle. And Dakar Dai, yeah. I don't know if you want to add to that, Alex, because I was going to start just going off on a tangent and talking about not playing with strikers. I don't know if it's appropriate to do that right now.
No, I think they're all really good points, Norman and Ben and Mickey. You know, like I said before, we've kind of had this, to some people and to the manager clearly, this kind of euphoric finish. Yet there's lots and lots of problems out ahead of next season. And although there's a different time scale between, you know, the end of this season and the next season compared to the last one, you know, are we confident that Steve Bruce and his coaching staff are going to be able to fix those seasons? Are they even aware that those problems exist? Now, Graham Jones is off with England for, you assume now, until hopefully July 11th, Euro 2020 final. So he's not going to be there. He's not. I'm sure there's contact between him and his employer in Newcastle United, but I agree with everything you've all said there. You've all hit the nail on the head. But Norman, let's talk about one of the lows of the season, not playing with any strikers.
Hi, can I just see a Southgate and Jones? Sounds like an 80s cop show, doesn't it? not playing with strikers is spectacular because, look, I think certain clubs can play without strikers, right? Man City can play without strikers when you've got, like, you know, Torres and Mahrez out wide for you. And you've got, you know, De Bruyne running through the middle. I think Man United, when they've got Fernandes kind of as a number 10 without a striker in front of him, but they've got Rashford and Greenwood out wide, you can do it then. With Joe Linton out wide and another, or even Dwight Gayle, who bizarrely we've seen him as a wide striker without any strikers through the middle. It's not sustainable for a club that's in our position. We always need to have a focal point on that pitch. We need to have somebody who can hold up the ball. We need to have somebody who can stretch a defence, somebody who can create space. And the big worry is that last season, we did play without a striker. And when Wilson's injured, when Wilson's not the team, we play without strikers, right? Or we put Alan Saint-Maximin through the middle, which is an absolute madness. Even if Saint-Maximin insists on playing through the middle, the manager should put his foot in and say no, because it's a waste of his talent. We've seen Miguel Almiron kind of almost as a focal point. We've seen the two number 10s, which is a new tactical innovation that doesn't seem to have worked. We've seen various combinations of a sort of front three when Callum Wilson's been out the side.
Well, the main one, Norman, was West Brom away and Villa at home, possibly, when he played Joe Linton and Ryan Fraser as two split strikers. And it just went as everyone, bar Steve Bruce and Graham Jones, thought it would go.
it brings a whole new dimension to the big man, little man up front, doesn't it? So what I want to see next season is I never want to see we not play strikers again unless we go out on, you know, in the summer and bring in like Mahrez and Greenwood. If that happens, fair enough, a bit different. But the reality is we need to play a striker. And what does that tell you? That tells you that we need to go out in the summer and mention Willock or someone of his ilk, absolute necessity. But so is bringing in another forward who can play when Callum Wilson's either injured or, and this will happen, out of form. He needs competition there. Dwight Gayle is a centre forward, but now that he's in the no man's land between the Premier League and the Championship, he's probably Championship now. But ultimately, regardless of that, Bruce doesn't believe in him. He clearly doesn't believe in him because he doesn't give enough opportunities to. When Wilson was injured, you'd think Dwight Gayle, bang, straight in, shoe in. Joe Linton isn't a striker, that's quite obvious. So we need to get into the summer. Like, we need to be looking at players in the Premier League who we can get on loan from other clubs. And we need to show a bit of ambition and we need to try and get into that. This might sound fantastical, but we need to be looking at someone like Tammy Abraham who kind of get in the Chelsea squad. And we need to be looking at bringing players in like that in loan because playing without a striker, much like the statistics that Alex reeled off before, you can't go two or three seasons being in the bottom three for everything that's kind of, you know, proactive on a football field. You can't go in two seasons playing a third of a season without a striker when you're a club in Newcastle's position, in my worthless opinion.
I don't even think we're going to get on to Joe Linton today because we've already done an hour and 7 minutes, but just another absolutely infuriating season. Glimpses towards the end, but like most things, you know, that Sheffield United performance, for example, last week, it was just classic Joe Linton. Almost didn't notice he was playing, went off, didn't notice he'd gone off. He actually made, I think, more Premier League appearances overall than any other player, including substitute. But again, I think he was fit all season. And only played 23 games, and that's good, by the way. That's fantastic. I don't want him in the team, but again, to have a £40 million player who barely starts half of the games in the Premier League, and he ain't getting any better. He's not any better for those 23 games. Again, looking at next season, looking at what we're talking about, how we're going to get better. How are we going to get any better with Joe Linton playing 23 games and scoring 4 goals? Like it's just nonsensical. Really quickly, lads. Give us your best and worst games. We'll do it as a quick fire. Ben, start with you. Best game?
I mean, it's got to be the Leicester one you've already mentioned. I mean, that was just... I mean, to find myself so clear against a team fighting top four. I mean, third. I think they were third in the league at the time. I mean, that just came out of absolute nowhere and to hammer them so comfortably. And we had that kind of little scare where they obviously got a couple back late and were pushing. But just that was a mental result. And I kind of think that kick-started their downfall, really, in terms of they've obviously missed out on top four as a result. But that result and the hammering they got that day was huge. And it's just interesting that we've kind of become a bit of a bogey side for Leicester the last few years. When they've been a great team, we've picked up some really, really good results and hammered them in a few of those games. So I think that's got to be the standout achievement. And I think everybody was shocked by that. We were so good that day away. Everybody was on form. It was really, really, really good performance.
Bowman?
West Ham away, because that was the most optimistic I felt all season. Straight after that game, I thought, you know what? Maybe we've got something here. Little did I know. Eh?
My answer was going to be exactly the same for the exact same reason. Mickey?
My answer is going to be similar to Ben. It's other than that West Ham game, it's probably the one game that we've won and played really well at the same time. And you've thought afterwards that was a great performance from Newcastle United side.
I think it's a random shout out for the Everton away game. It's probably worth. Sorry, mate. I think Everton away was completely unexpected. There you go. Graham Jones's debut.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the game. So I was just going to say that was the game I said before where Wilson kind of showed his mettle and was unbelievable that day. So yeah, that I think that was again one of the more pleasing ones, because you kind of saw what when the team actually changed formation and kind of had a bit of an idea of what to do. We were absolutely battered again, a team that were expected to come in and batter us, and we're doing really well at the time. We absolutely killed them that day as well.
Okay, let's go to worst games. Ben, kick off.
I think the Sheffield defeat 1-0 got to be. I mean, there's a few bad ones, but that kind of just summed everything up in terms of that horrific run that we're on against a team that I don't think they'd picked up. I think that was their first win, wasn't it, of the season? At that point. I mean, the games against Sheffield in the Premier League have not been amazing, but we've won the games. But that was just, I mean, absolutely had nothing. It just offered with nothing. We looked like a team heading for relegation, and just looked like there was no answers. And as I say, it was kind of. We'd just had that horrific run where we'd kind of dropped out the cups. Obviously, we'd kind of lost to the or drop points anyway to the promoted sides, and that was kind of the one to sort of kickstart the season back up. And we just looked bereft of ideas, and that was a really, really worrying performance. That looked like we were nailed to relegation.
Norm?
Brentford away in the League Cup. Brentford's reserves, basically. One of the most disappointing performances I've ever witnessed. And ultimately, like the Man City game the season before in the quarterfinal of the Cup, it was that those two cup runs, air quotes, were used as defence mechanisms for quite a few of Steve Bruce's friends in the media. And the reality was it kind of laid bare in that particular game. It was utterly dreadful and a massive letdown.
Thank you.
I also was going to go with Brentford. It's where the season fell apart. You could look at the game immediately afterwards against Fulham, where they should have won. 10-man Fulham should have beat. It wasn't a pen. Although there wouldn't have been down 10 if we didn't get the pen. But you know, swings and roundabouts. That you can almost count that whole week as one, couldn't you? It was like 3 games in 6 days or something. Where we were absolutely terrible in all three. But the Brentford one is the really bad one, because they didn't even want to win. Like. Brentford didn't want to win, and we went there with our full team and lost, and lost in a pretty convincing way. Like, pathetic.
There's an argument that I've seen several times. I've seen it repeated tonight that more ambitious football club sacks the manager after that performance in a game of that magnitude. But we'll leave that for now. Mine was actually different to all of you, so please, no one said it. Mine was the West Brom game. Now I appreciate we drew that game. But it was one of the few times I've ever watched Newcastle United and just thought, what am I doing with my life? Why am I watching Newcastle United with Jeff Hendrick trying to get a point away at pretty much already relegated West Brom when we haven't won a game in 3 months? What am I doing? Like the team went there and had, you know, I'm just looking at the fixtures now. We had Villa and Brighton coming up, and it was kind of, you know, after a bad run, these are the fixtures, everything's going to be okay. We've got these games coming, so Maximan's back, all this kind of stuff. And I just thought, we're a disgrace. I thought we deserved to get relegated. Going into that game, putting in that performance, it was almost like Bruce had this ridiculous respect for Sam Allardyce and his team. There was a reason West Brom went down without a fight this year. I think we were 2 points off safety when they sacked Bilic. And we went then, they were like 9 points or 11 points from safety, and we didn't even try to win the game. It was an awful, awful, awful experience. Please, I wasn't there, like, because if fans were allowed on the ground, I'd have been there. But who knows?
Between us there, we've got like five or six worst games of the season, and we haven't even talked about the fact that we lost twice against Brighton 3-0.
Yeah. we pretty much kept Brighton up because Fulham was so bad, but Brighton rely on their 6 points or 4 points against us every season, don't they? quickly then, lads, quick fire. Player of the season, Ben?
I'll go Fernandez, I think.
Fernandez, well, I wasn't expecting that. Norman?
I was going to say Fernandez. Just because of the impact he's had later on the season, and now I'm completely thrown as to who it is.
You can have Fernandez. I'll go someone else if you want.
Can I come with the same as Ben? But I didn't particularly want to. I think it's interesting because I'm trying to look in the whole context of the season as opposed to the last 9 games, because the next name that came to my head was Paul Dummett, bizarrely. But because he's been brilliant, he's been massively influential. Actually, you know what? Looking at just how the impact Dummett's had since he came back on the side, I'm going to say Paul Dummett. Unsung hero in the last 9 games for me, last 10 games.
Mickey?
My head goes Wilson, my heart goes Saint-Maximin. Love watching Max play football. It's one of the only things that's brought me any joy watching Newcastle United this year, is watching Max skin people.
Joe Willock for me. He comes in, he scores 8 goals. And bear in mind that last season Newcastle's top scorer was Jonjo Shelvey with 5 or 6. Willock comes in, plays like 13 games and scores 8 goals. It's unprecedented for a 21-year-old midfielder to come into a struggling, well, shite team in the Premier League and do what he did. Kind of tells you why England are so highly tipped for the Euros this summer, that a player like that hasn't even really seriously been mentioned for getting a place in the squad or the friendlies, never mind the team. But what an impact. What you know, when Papi Cissé came in 11-12, we're already good. He just made we a bit better. We're dog shit. we're still our shit. But we've improved somewhat. If there's a balance between dog shit and shit, it's because of Joe Willock. So he's my player of the season. Lads, I think we'll leave it there. The end of season show is always a long one. We do have lots more end of season review patter on our Patreon platform. £5.50 a month. Would love for you to join us. If you join, by the way, on Patreon, you've not done it before, you get access to our full 3-and-a-bit-year catalogue of podcasts going right back to the 17-18 season. So there's literally thousands of podcasts you can listen to there, or hundreds at least. We're going to have full coverage of the Euros. We're hopefully going to be at Newcastle's pre-season games, all being well with restrictions and stuff like that. Norman does Prem Patter and has lots more of those shows coming up. We'll have Keith Gillespie on Patreon all summer. So if you like this podcast, please come along and join us, Norman.
You mentioned the Prem Patter podcast there. We're going to be doing a season review on Prem Patter, so basically looking at pretty much every team in the Premier League with alongside Keith Gillespie. So if you're not on Patreon, it's pretty much worth the £5 per month just to listen to Keith talk, because obviously his insight as an ex-pro is something that we kind of give. It's brilliant.
Spot on. And also one final favour, thanks to everyone who's listened this season to the True Faith podcast. I think it's where 6th season or something like that. Time flies there. Take we're back, Mickey and Ben, to 2014 and looking ahead to Alan Pardew and his season coming up with what would be his last season as Newcastle manager. You can do us a massive favour by leaving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and in a nice comment if that is your platform of choice. But we'll leave it there. Mickey, Ben, Norman, thanks to you, lads. Thanks for all your hard work this season. Thanks to you, the listener, for sticking with the True Faith podcast. And we will see you on the free show next season, probably for the season preview, and of course full transfer coverage of any new players across on Patreon. So thanks for listening. It's been a terrible season. Speak to you soon.